Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, I'm joined in the studio by Caroline West, who is the author of a brand new book. She's an expert in sexuality studies, but her book is about Dublin's infamous red light district, as it was once. It's called Monto. And the book delves into the lives of the women who worked in the north inner city brothels, who until that point had more or less been airbrushed from history. The book is called Wrong Women Selling Sex in Monto, Dublin's Forgotten Red Light District. And Caroline, you're very welcome. Thank you for being with us this morning. Now, people might be very surprised to hear that what we're talking about here was Europe's biggest red light district from 1860 right up to 1925. So how many sex workers were there in Monto?
There were tens of thousands throughout its 60-year period. So at any one time, there could be 1,600 or there could just be a couple of hundred really towards the end of it. But if you have those like maybe 1,600 women, then you have all the thousands of men, then you have the madams, then you have the bully boys, and then you have the local community, because it was all mixed in with family homes as well. So you had a brothel right next to a family with 20 people in one room. So it was very mixed in. So this one tiny little 1 square mile pretty much had thousands of people in it at any one time. Mm-hmm.
And you were attracted to finding out more about the women, their life stories, how they came to be there, how some of them managed to get out.
Yeah, definitely. The reason why I started the book was I read someone else's book on Monto, which was fantastic. But they just had one sentence in it to say that some of the women were smothered when they went into hospital to seek treatment for syphilis. And I thought that was worth a lot more investigation. And, you know, because we know now church and state and how the Magdalen laundries have been and mother and baby homes. And I thought that that was a very important part, you know, of our history. And just because they're sex workers, people don't like talking about it. You know, it's women, it's sex, it's history, it's, you know, money. People don't like talking about a lot of those kind of things. But it's a really important part of our history. And it actually, you know, it impacts the people today. You know, there's a lot of people reading this book that will kind of think, oh, I see myself in it, or it's reflective of the sex trade today. So not much has really changed since that time.
And some of those women, you know, we can understand have very tough lives, very tough existences there. Others were running the show. And while by today's standards, we probably think, well, that was a tough life too. You know, some of them did very well out of this and were running big businesses.
Big, huge business. There's one Madam Annie Meehan, and she had about 200 houses. So she had a huge empire. But they're very complex people. So they might look really violent on the surface, and they were. They would slash the girls' faces without hesitation if they tried to, you know, challenge them or any way. But people like Annie, you know, she was pregnant at 13, married at 14, and then went on to run the brothels. You know, the skills taken to, you know, build up that empire are really important. But they did look after each other as well and build community and, you know, pay rent, share food. Like, life in Monto was brutal. It was brutal without the sex work because of the poverty and the lack of, you know, sanitation. Even you could have 100 people in one house with it, just a broken outdoor toilet to use. And these are the women navigating this and trying to survive. And a lot of them originally would have come from the famine. So 1860 would have been the women who survived that, or their children
coming from workhouses.
Coming from workhouses, which were brutal places. And the women who sold sex in workhouses were also segregated. So they weren't viewed as, like, you know, good, legitimate women at all. They were to be kept away for fear of moral containment as well as or contamination as well as physical. Mm-hmm. So we saw that in the hospitals as well. They went in. They would be kept in separate wards because the respectable women caught syphilis from their husbands cheating on them. But these women were viewed as the spreaders. So they were the dirty, dangerous women that
treated
had to be protected
very differently.
Yeah. So that power dynamic is
when
really
you mentioned
important.
The 200 houses, I was struck when I was reading the book about how good they were at the sales and marketing side, closing down one house, doing it up, reopening it with a great big party with lots of drink and music, and it was beautifully decorated and so on. But this was all about extracting as much money as they could from the clients.
Yeah, absolutely. They created an atmosphere. You know, a high class brothel at the start of Monto was an incredibly glamorous place. You know, they had paintings on the wall, they had proper wallpaper, proper carpets, rugs, armchairs, proper beds, champagne glasses. They would serve food, they'd put on massive amounts of entertainment. But as Monto went down, it just, the brothel kind of became just maybe one person in a bare room, and they'd have to rip the floorboards up for heating sometimes. So really quite changed in, you mm-hmm. know, in I suppose the fortunes of the women. Like, as you said, some of them earned so much money. Some of them put their kids through private school. Some of them were able to get enough money to emigrate, but then others, you know, found their way on the streets and had a pretty horrific life.
And you talk about the women who were kicked out for whatever transgression they were deemed to have committed. And mm-hmm. you spoke about the slashing. The arm would be slashed first as a warning, and then the face, so that they weren't attractive.
Yeah.
Those women ended up, in some cases, selling sex on the streets.
Yeah, which is pretty grim. I mean, you were probably looking at like maybe a shilling, which didn't go far in those days, or maybe even payment for like a bottle of beer or a drink or a bit of food or something. And those women would literally have the clothes on their back, you know, and mm-hmm. you've no opportunity to change your clothes and dry them in the weather and stuff. So a lot of those women would seek shelters in the hallways at nighttime of the tenements. But you would have stories of policemen coming in specifically to beat up the women in the hallways. So, and they just, there was no safety, you know, like those women who had to go on the streets, at least in the brothel, there was like a little bit of protection. They had the bully boys there, they had the madams there, they had each other. But on the streets, if they had to go down a dark laneway or a coach house, they were on their own with that client. And the clients were quite happy to, you know, commit sexual violence because they'd be on a ship the next day. They'd be away. There'd be no accountability. They knew the police wouldn't come looking for them. And if this is someone on the street, they're not going to go to the street, the police either.
You mentioned there that a lot of them were coming up from the port, the people who were buying sex from these women. Tell us a bit about who was going into Monto.
Yeah, so the main bulk of clients were essentially the British Army and the British Navy, because Monto backed onto the army barracks. So they literally would arrive at the barracks and then go out looking for women and drink in Monto, as was the way with a lot of the British soldiers and sailors around that time. So actually Monto was like a key stop in the British Empire. So they would have interacted with the women here and then gone on to other brothels around the world. So they'd share all the knowledge from what they learned in the other places. Also bring back STIs also. But a lot of the other clients were just the average person, the dock worker, you know, the priests. There are stories of priests going in as well, or the everyday kind of factory worker. Mm-hmm. So really all of humanity. There was even royalty, you know, apparently Prince Albert lost his virginity in Monto and was a regular visit there, which doesn't surprise people who know a lot about Prince Albert. He was pretty Dirty Bertie, I think he was known as at one point. But it catered for everybody, you know, and Ireland has a long history of that. Even 17th century, you know, everyone who's involved in running Dublin Castle, you know, they had courtesans put up in apartments and everything. So it's always been there. It's mm-hmm. just been more or less visible sometimes.
Yeah, just going back to what you were saying about the women who ended up on the streets and the misery of their lives. But for the women who were in the brothels, they were locked into the rooms in some cases. You tell that story of the bucket being dropped down and the children putting the alcohol in the bucket because they couldn't leave. They weren't allowed to leave.
Yeah, and it sounds like a funny story at the start, you know, they're like getting the kids involved. But really, that has such chilling notions for like their ability to consent then. If they're locked in a room, mm-hmm. it's probably not a whole consensual situation going on. Whereas lots of people did, you know, consent and were in there and they went in for a few weeks and got their money and went out. But then if you're locked in a brothel like that, the concept of choice is just not really an option then. But then when those women either tried to escape or they just had enough and were just kicked out, they were often stripped of the clothes that they had because the women would rent them the clothes. So these gorgeous silks and furs and fabrics and very classy dresses.
They were paying for them, were they?
They were paying extortionate rates for them, and they would get taken off them. And the women knew, like when they got kicked out of the brothel, like life was going to be even tougher, you know. So they might have had to stay in Monto and continued selling sex because where else are they going to go? There's no other jobs. They might not have any family. There's no social welfare at the time. Your other option was to go into a Magdalen laundry. And many of the women already knew how bad they were. They would choose prison sometimes over going into the laundries. So if they came up in court, they'd get that choice and they'd choose prison. So
did some of them leave for a better life, though?
Absolutely. Yes. Loads of them met their husbands there. And then they'd either live as husband and wife and the husband would come back. And then she'd do whatever she needed to do when the husband was away. But they would, yeah, meet, marry, and then go off and live. So for a lot of women, it's very transitory, which is still in the sex trade now. You know, the average porn performer spends like maybe like 3-4 months in the industry. But then other times you have people there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same kind of thing and the same kind of clients. But same levels of precarity. The lower down the status hierarchy you are, the more vulnerable you are to not just violence, but sexual violence as well.
So how then did Catholic Ireland view Monto and deal with it?
Unsurprisingly, not very positively. So Monto was a perfect place, a perfect right time situation for how it grew up. But at the turn of the century, you're talking, you know, 1910s, 1920s, the Catholic Church was really kind of embedding itself into that relationship with the state. The laundries were really kind of kicking up. Nunneries were opening up everywhere and the mother and baby homes were opening up. So a lot of the women who started the laundry system, they were sex workers and often people from Monto. So the Maglan Laundry on Sean McDermott Street backed onto Monto. So some of the women would end up in there, where the madams would also send their laundry in, so their ex-employees would then clean it. So because the church and state were saying, we're different from England, you know, we don't want British colonialism anymore. A good Irish woman is a Catholic married woman who stays at home, has loads of babies and is pretty much silent. Her domain is in the home. It's not a public woman. And they combined to do things like, you know, De Valera's Ireland. 1935, contraception was outlawed in Ireland. So the women of Monto kind of had a little bit more freedom, but you could see that as it was going, that they were just excluded from all the services and then locked up and institutionalized too. So they didn't fit this new Ireland. And we had one woman called Honor Bry, who was murdered in 1926. She was a sex worker. Allegedly murdered by respectable people like a doctor and a guard, and they got off. But the jury only gave them, I think, about 3 minutes of deliberations. But because they were respectable people and Honor was a sex worker, it just wasn't a consideration. So people celebrated the guys getting off on it, and no one ever bothered looking for Honor's murderer because she was the wrong kind of woman.
You mentioned that happened in 1926, but for Monto, the finish, the line is drawn under it. This is the closure of Monto in 1925, coming up now to its 100th anniversary of its closure. Why was it closed at that time? What happened?
So there was a guy called Frank Duff, who was a religious Catholic campaigner with the Legion of Mary, and he had decided enough was enough. So he decided now was the right time to tackle Monto. Monto was kind of on its knees at that point because, again, there's better opportunities for women. We'd more education, we'd more employment. You know, there was less forcing of women into things like the sex trade for survival. And more women were, you know, Kathleen Lynn was setting up hospitals to help inner city children. So life had improved. He just kind of rode that wave in. Marched in on the 12th of March, did a whole big midnight raid, kicked all the tenants out. They had new tenants ready with furniture, literally one in, one out, so that the madams couldn't move back in. And then they pronounced it cleansed. They put a crucifix in the wall and said, there you go, you know, it's all cleansed, it's all good now. But obviously that doesn't shut down the issue of Monto. Like, the women still needed to eat and survive. So they just ended up going on the streets by themselves, which is even more vulnerable for
them. About the women then who were running the show at that time, even though it had fallen back? I mean, they were still running businesses. I assume they had means, they had money, but they were out.
Yeah, they were out, but a lot of them turned into, you know, renting the costumes then at that stage. So May Oblong spent about 40 odd years in Monto, ruled everything with an iron fist, but then realised actually there's more money in money lending and renting the clothes to the girls at extortionate rates or just providing them with new clothes, things like that. So they'd kind of left the brothel side as such. There's very few of them left. And so some of them, Frank came in and said, look, I'll cut you a deal. You let the women out of your control go. We'll give you some money. Half of them took it. They were like, yeah, grand. I'm ready to get out of here. And then some of them had a last stand and they were like, no, we're going to stand up against the church and stay. And they ended up getting arrested. So, it was kind of pronounced as like this man had saved these women of Monto. But the women of Monto were saving themselves as well. They were building their communities and women like Catherine Lynn putting in, you know, welfare state ideas, you know. Lots of women did the work of Monto, but it's not, again, it's all invisible because it's wrong women.
So listen, what is your hope that people will come away from with this book? What do you think we'll take from it?
I think just to look at the women as humans, it's that basic. You know, when I was looking at it, all the women were just dismissed as, oh, poor unfortunates. And that's it. And I was like, boy, who are they? Where's their humanity? Like, what did they do? How did they survive? And, you know, I've studied the porn industry before, and it's the same kind of thing of like the whisper networks and community and looking after each other. So it's fascinating to see that's, you know, the same situation as it was before. So again, we do the same thing. We dismiss people. Oh, you're just a porn performer. You're just a sex worker. You're just a prostitute. So can we look at people behind those labels, see the humanity, and then maybe learn from the past that we can support people who may be in similar situations today.
Yeah,
so
it's also a fascinating insight into the history of that particular area of Dublin, which, you know, people might not be aware of, which is why you wrote the book.
Yes.
Caroline, thanks so much for coming in. The book is out now. It's called Wrong Women, Selling Sex in Monto, Dublin's Forgotten Red Light District. Thank you so much, Caroline, for being with us. We will take a break.